This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation. Greetings and salutations. This is Todd Weber, and we're back for our second episode of Conversation Comics with my guest, Stephanie Holly. Steph, how are you?
I'm good, and you?
I'm doing well. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. So we are talking, continuing our conversation from last time. We talked a lot about wrestling in addition to comics, but this time we're going to kind of go deeper on comics and the things that Steph's into, and we'll share our thoughts. We also want to talk about comics industry lost a relative giant, somebody who has affected my life. His work has been instrumental in some of the things I really like to read, and that's Darwin Cook, who we found out on Friday had progressive cancer and was in care, and then late Friday night, Becky Cloonan tweeted that Darwin had passed. So do you have any specific Darwin Cook memories or works that you really enjoyed, Steph?
I like the Parker series a lot. I think the first thing of his that I picked up was probably the Catwoman series, because that was like...
Catwoman with Brubaker or Selena's Big Score?
Probably the first one would be the Brubaker series, just because I'm trying to remember how old I was when I first saw that, and I remember reading it. And I mean, that book was pretty, like... very stylized. I mean, he's always had a very specific style. I've always appreciated it. It's very simple, but I don't think anyone could ever make anything that clean and simple.
Yeah.
Like, we already have these disgusting fake sketches out there that
already are, people are flooding the market.
Those people are awful. I hate them, and I oh god, nothing pisses me off more than when people do that. It's like, I know I shouldn't be too surprised, because I mean, people do that at conventions all the time and sell work that doesn't belong to them, but then to be like, this guy, like, within 48 hours of him dying, we have this disgusting person on the internet trying to sell a trace as original art, and
we talked a lot about it last time. People suck. People
they do.
Are jerks, and I blame the 70s, because the 70s created a lot of bad parents, you know, key parties and stuff like that. So all these generations of people my age and younger, they grew up without, say, a moral compass. I don't know. I'm throwing stuff against the wall here. But Darwin will be missed. I really, really enjoyed the New Frontier. And Russell and I were talking earlier that New Frontier is just such a timeless thing. It's of a time. You know, it's the Silver Age. It's the space race. But it's timeless in its own way, too. I bought it initially in issues, and then I got a trade, and then I sprung for the Absolute edition of Darwin Cook's The New Frontier, which is kind of a look at the Justice League almost in real time as they happened in the late 50s, early 60s, but it stands alone, too. It's as though it's on its own parallel Earth, and it's just amazing, an amazing story. I loved how they used Aquaman and Martian Manhunter, and even Batman was given kind of a new twist in that book, so...
And the adaptation was pretty good.
The movie is excellent. For DC animated films, it is. It's quite good. So, and those are all always worth checking out. But the New Frontier, they did a nice job of keeping it true to the source material and keeping Darwin's stylistic choices intact, which was great. So I have that one on digital. I watched that the other day. I also went to the shop and picked up Graphic Inc., The Art of Darwin Cook, which is an oversized hardcover that has a lot of his published and unpublished work, including the two Jonah Hex issues he'd done in the last few years that are really good that I didn't know about. So, and the Spirit. I'm not a big fan of the Spirit character, or I know it's kind of a sacred cow, Will Eisner's the Spirit, but I enjoy Darwin Cook's work on the character. So, have you ever read The Spirit?
I read, like, a lot, like, some of the older ones kind of out of order, because it's, like, it was at a time where the collected editions were kind of loose and everywhere, so it was, like, a random couple old ones. I mean, the thing that really sucks is that, like, because I grew up in, like, the 90s is the thing that all the characters that I grew up with were inspired by the spirit. Huh. So at the time, well, I feel like they kind of were in that like weird pulpy way.
Like the ultra violent, I don't know. But I always feel it's more of a reaction to Watchmen, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because you can draw a line through, say, the spirit to the question to Rorschach. You know, it's kind of the evolution of a similar character. And when I go back and read the old Will Eisner spirits, there's racial characterizations that I just make me very uncomfortable. So, and yet he's held up as this Kirby-esque figure among artists, you know.
Yeah.
There's comics awards named after Eisner.
I mean, his books are really helpful. What, like the how to write comic stories, like the 11 panels that, or is it 11 or 12?
I don't know, but
the panels that always work is very prolific. And anytime someone tries to give me advice, they always cite me to that. And I'm trying to find like a poster of it so I can put on the wall. But I mean, it's his work as far as influencing people, and his learning books are really a big thing for Will Eisner. But back to Darwin Cook, there's just one thing I really got to throw into that conversation too. There was a comic that I think was included in Harley Quinn issue zero that he drew of Amanda Connor and Jimmy Palmiotti getting married and Harley Quinn like crashing the wedding.
Nice. Wow, that's pretty cool.
And that comic was so cute to me, and I've always loved it because he drew Amanda, like, I don't know what her actual wedding dress was like, but she had a Power Girl window in her wedding dress. And it was just, to me, it was really cute to see that, like, have, you know, one artist that I really enjoy depict another artist, like, you know, personal time. Like, that's not something you really see a lot of. And I think Amanda and Jimmy are pretty private. Like, I mean, they'll do interviews, but they're very private about their personal lives. So that was kind of cute to see their friendship. And, you know, I was a little bit in denial on Twitter. I think you can go back and see the messages if you really want to look at that. But I didn't want to believe that he had died so soon because I just saw, okay, I'm kind of a jerk. There's a couple indie writers who I think are incredibly pessimistic on Twitter.
Just a couple?
Okay, there's a lot of them. But I don't know what they're like as actual people. So I saw them just tweeting like, RIP Darwin Cook. And I'm just like, that is mean and wrong. Like, his family hadn't said anything yet. And I just felt it was kind of like not the most tasteful thing to be breaking the news on Twitter without a statement from his family, and everyone else like just kept doing that. And then several comic book websites just started reporting it based off of those early tweets.
Right. And yeah, and I had a discussion too. I was in it too. It's a tough call because I'm not a very high profile person, tweeter especially. And I was talking about it with the hashtag Thank You Darwin right after Becky Cloonan put it up, and then Brubaker confirmed it. But, you know, we hadn't heard anything from the family. And I guess that is the way to go, is wait for an actual statement. But people, it's just not, doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah.
The information flows so fast. And then, I don't know, I get a little brusque when somebody says, you made that up. Where did you hear that?
Well, yeah.
Somebody obviously close to Darwin, like Ed Brubaker, is putting it out there. I think it's going to be legit, you know. When George Martin, the Beatles producer, died and nobody had heard anything except for one kind of vague Ringo and Sean Lennon tweet, if those people are going to tweet about it, it's on them if it's wrong. And they're not going to put out – Ringo Starr is not going to tweet that, you know – some falsified information, you know.
I don't even know if he has
your
Twitter.
Aunt who's going to post, oh, Lena Horne died. Lena Horne died 5 years ago, Mom. You know, that kind of thing. So we joke, but it's very sad and very serious, and Darwin will be missed. And I, if you haven't read New Frontier, I think that's, to me, the easiest thing that would appeal to the most widest amount of people. He did some Marvel stuff. If you go to Marvel Unlimited, you can search his name and find all the stuff. I have a nice little cover he did of Tony Stark, Iron Man, with his mask up and drinking a martini. That's pretty cool.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. So, and Civil War is dominating the box office. Have you seen it yet?
Yes, and I plan to go see it again. I think I saw it the day it came out, like, really early in the morning, and I got to watch a fight between a lady with a child and a gentleman asking her to please remove her child if it continues to cry. Which was just kind of awkward because, like, the guy was being patient and the lady just kept escalating. And it was like, oh, my gosh, I hope this ends before the movie starts.
Did the guy use the pronoun it?
I wish he had, because this lady was just, I'm not going to get too into it because it gets a little bit weird with some words that were tossed around between the lady towards the man. Wow. And so, yeah, that was a little bit weird. But yeah, no, I got to watch that. But then I got to see the movie, and it was great. I loved Black Panther, and I loved that his sister just looked really super tall when she – I mean, I think that's going to be his sister in the scene where they're going out to the car. And Black Widow's in the way, and she tells her to get out of the way. And I'm just like, yay, a female superhero that's actually going to be tall.
We'll see. I hope that – you know, we've speculated on the Captain Marvel casting too. Who do you have a hope for that character?
I want it to be I really like the idea of I think it's Katie Sackhoff, the Starbuck from Battlestar Galactica. Hopefully I'm getting my people correct.
Yeah, and she's kind of low profile these days. I think the last thing she did was 24. I haven't seen her in anything. She might be on cable doing something, but yeah, 10 years ago that would have been probably a really good choice. She had a very high profile Starbuck then. I'm hoping for Gwendolyn Christie from Game of Thrones. And she was Captain Phasma too, that character.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but we'll see. I think Marvel has hopes that it's somebody of a more marquee person.
I want new faces. I want nobodies. That's the one thing I enjoy the most. Like, I made a really mean joke the other day on Twitter about if Zack Snyder was allowed to cast Starfire without anyone stopping him. And I put a picture of Eva Marie.
Oh, very good. Very good.
That's what he would do because he would not care. He'd just be like, she's hot and she has red hair. She's kind of orange. And then we'd all be sad.
Speaking of Zack Snyder, it appears he's not going to be – I don't know. This is turning into a news current events show. Sorry, Greg and Nick, who just did one last week. But, yeah, it sounds like Zack's not going to be in charge of the DCU as far as the motion picture version, Warner Brothers bringing the entire DC universe to screen. It looks like it's Geoff Johns and another individual. Do you know his name? I don't have it here.
It's John.
John Byrne? No.
No. You guys really like to talk trash on him.
On John Byrne?
You guys were talking. Okay, so I was listening to Sellers Points and I enjoyed it, but I also heard some like John Byrne trash talking. And it's weird because I know someone who is friends with his kid. And so I hear all
with
these.
John Byrne's son? Really?
Yeah, and so I hear all these wonderful stories about like how John is really actually just the sweet guy, but he's a grumpy old man that doesn't want to deal with people. And so it's really sweet. And then he's like, you know, if you ever, I don't know what I can say. All I can
say is. We can talk about John Byrne. I think John Byrne's public enough. And his art and his work speaks for itself, but he also he's okay putting himself out as a curmudgeon.
Pretty much when I was 23, this is allegedly.
Allegedly, okay. Allegedly. I have my edit button ready.
I was told that, I was 23 at the time. I was told, like, if you wrote him a letter, you could probably be his next girlfriend. I was
what?
Like,
no,
that's creepy.
I don't think that's real. I don't think
that's creepy. They're just okay, we can edit that out.
Of course, when I was 23, if someone wrote me a letter, no, wait, that's different. John Berg is going to be running the Warner Brothers movies with Jeff, and that he's a looks like we've got our Kevin Feige in place. And
I know, but I just want people to remember something I don't see people talking about on Twitter, and it drives me insane. And I really hate to say this because I love Geoff Johns. He just seems like such a nice, wonderful, caring person.
Grain of salt time here.
He's just wonderful, but he also had a part in Green Lantern the movie.
Green Lantern the movie, starring Ryan Reynolds.
It was just so bad, yeah. And it was, oh my gosh, and then at the comic book store, I think Like, my coworker, he just loved that movie, and my dad loved that movie. My dad had never seen any sci-fi superhero movies ever, and so he went with me to go see Green Lantern. And he was blown away. He was just thought, oh my gosh, willpower? This is like brand spanking new to his brain. So he loved Green Lantern. And then my coworker loved Green Lantern. But there's something about it where I'm just like, okay, you guys seem to be like very forgiving people that like to watch. But I that movie is just...
Could they have what could they have done to have fixed the film, or
change Blake Lively out?
Okay, that's an easy one. Yeah.
It would have been cool to have like a better Carol Danvers, because I'm sorry, did I say
Carol Ferris?
Captain Marvel.
You got your Carols.
Got my Carols. But there's space. No, there's not space, there's planes, and so then I got confused. But yeah, they could have changed the casting for that. I think I kind of like how goofy, like when they go up into space and like Kilowog and everyone's a little bit goofy. I like that. But it's like there's just something about like the whole villain could have been changed. Like
Hector Hammond?
Yeah. That was just a little bit too cliche and silly. And it just seems like, I don't know, in a way, it's also just kind of like, look at these pretty people and look at this angry ugly guy.
Yeah, okay.
Just like, it's just silly to me, and the like the cloud effect, and it's just like, oh god. Like, I just think they could have done, I think they should have just, I feel bad because when I criticize things I like to have other things in place to suggest, but with that movie I'm just like, Green Lantern is such a strange thing. And I mean, I loved Green Lantern, like, after I saw that movie, and then I actually started reading, like, Silver Age Green Lantern, and I just fell in love with how silly it was. Now I've got my ring that I wear, and I've got the little replica, which I need to get out of storage. But, yeah, it's just a movie that is very sad, that it just wasn't the time.
You have this potential, you have this shot, DC, let's go for it. And I think it was overreaching. I think if they had kept it planetary based for one, and maybe introduced the core of the next movie, I don't know. It was goofy. The villain was strange. I know somebody who has an oversized head, so I try not to project my feelings for the movie. Oh my goodness.
I almost felt sad because I'm like, dude, he just happens to be really disformed and happens to be a jerk at the same time. But it's like at the same time when you know, I don't know, I know what it's like to be unattractive for a certain amount of, like, there's just something about that would just like, look at this ugly person being angry at pretty people was just kind of, like, it's weird that it even took that tone.
Yeah. Do you think Ryan Reynolds was close, or was...
I thought he was a good Hal Jordan. Obviously, he's an amazing Deadpool. I'm kind of like, on the Deadpool comics. I enjoy them, but I don't get into it. Like, some people are like, Deadpool's the best. And I'm just like, okay. No. But,
yeah, with... He pretty much is Deadpool, you know.
He's Deadpool.
He is.
And it's sad that that got sidetracked with the Green Lantern movie.
Yeah. All right, so would Nathan Fillion have been the right Green Lantern?
You know, I really liked the idea of Chris Pine as Hal Jordan, just because of his performance as
Captain Kirk.
Captain Kirk, like, he could be that sleazy guy that, you know, just can't take, like, I don't know. I feel like the young, like, when we see Kirk acting silly in the Star Trek movies, I think if he could bring that over to Hal Jordan and make it a little bit sleazier.
Okay.
That's good, but I mean, I kind of like that. Like, I think he's gonna be Steve Trevor.
Steve Trevor, yeah.
Yes, yeah. I like that Steve Trevor has that kind of look.
He's always been really stiff in the comics, right?
Yeah.
Steve Trevor is kind of the straight guy, so to speak. He's just the kind of a dullard in general. But we'll see. Chris Pine's got a lot of personality, and he's got a presence. So.
But will Gal Gadot be able to like pick him up and carry him around like the early Wonder Woman comic, wherever she wanted to prove a point? Like, I think it was like. Sensation Comics, there's like a cover of her just picking up Steve Trevor and carrying him around, and there's just a bunch of flowers. I'm just like, yeah, can we get Gal Gadot to do that to Chris Pine?
I think Gal Gadot is technically taller than Henry Cavill. So we'll see. She's got to be taller than Chris Pine, who I think is maybe 5'10", 5'8".
But I think Gal Gadot's only like...
I don't know. Well, these are all things we could look up on Wikipedia.
I'm looking it up right now because this is something that I remember complaining about. Okay, she was 5'10". She's 5'10".
Uh-huh.
My only issue with that was like, I really want... Like, there was another girl who... The Australian Justice League movie that got canceled.
Right, George Miller's Justice League movie. And he had cast a... She ended up being in one of his Mad Max, the Fury Road, so that's good.
Yeah, but I think she was like 6-something. And she was super tall, and so I wanted someone else who was also, like, super tall. Like, but I'm over it. I mean, I'll just accept that that's, like, she didn't do a bad job. It's just...
I think, yeah, her casting is good, but Ben Affleck's has worked out really well for me. I think Ben Affleck's going to be your Batman for the next generation if this all goes well. I really enjoyed him in the movie. I didn't enjoy the movie, per se, but I enjoyed Affleck as Batman, especially the action. He brought a presence to that I really liked. Another thing about Darwin Cook in The New Frontier, he draws Wonder Woman as taller than Superman, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I like that.
And I like her gladiator outfit he gave her. I always like it when they do that.
Yeah, George Perez back in the 80s did that Wonder Woman gold armor, and I enjoy that too when they add that to her character.
There's a really cool Adam Hughes statue of her in like fully decked out armor too. That's... I don't own it because I haven't really seen it around for sale, but I think it might be based, I think it was from like the series of covers he did for Gail Simone's run, I think.
Okay.
But that one's pretty sick. And it's like one of the fiercest statues I've ever seen where it seemed like they really wanted to have Wonder Woman look more fierce than sexy. Because she has this like, she's doing a war cry with her face. And then she has the sword sticking out, I believe. And it's just a very intense statue that was from the DC Cover Girls statues that came out, I think, like 2000-something from Adam Hughes. That one and the Zatanna one are the ones that I really need to get to my collection. But that Zatanna one is near impossible to get for under $500 now.
Really?
So, yeah, finding that has been hard.
What do you think of the DC Cover Girls concept and line?
The statue?
Just the whole thing. It's a product line. You know, it's a... They do statues, they do figures, they do a comic, they do... I've got a Wonder Woman magnet I'm looking at.
Oh, well, Lacey, I buy all of that. I have a really bad statue collection at home that, like... my parents... Okay, it's not until I bring something home that they like... That they were like, oh, God, what are you doing? They just thought it was silly. And then it was actually the Marvel stuff that won my parents over.
Hmm.
But, I mean, I like the DC stuff. Like, I've got the Green Lantern replica that lights up and, like, the full-size one. I've got several of the Bombshell statues. But, I mean, I've been collecting statues seriously probably since 2009 is when I began starting collecting with the Shouju Kodo Bokiya line. But I think the first statue my dad bought me for Christmas one year was the Amanda Connor Batgirl bust, where she's doing the little, like, it was the Adam West bat dance, I believe.
Uh-huh. The Batusi.
Yeah, the Batusi. Yep. She was doing that, and it's like that was my favorite, and I thought it was hilarious that my dad went to the comic book shop. And all he had seen me do was, like, the Batusi with my eye. I'm like, there's a statue of Batgirl that I want to get, and she's doing this. And I did, like, the Batusi. And then, like, apparently my dad just went into the comic book store and went to the manager and was like, I have no idea what I'm looking for. It's like a bat, a cat. I think it's a cat. Maybe it's a cat. But it's doing this. And I did the Batusi to who would soon be my boss. And was just like, I thought it was hilarious.
That's pretty funny.
But it did that. But, yeah, that's, like, my first real... statue, and then it went on from there. But I mean, I love...
What do you collect? I mean, do you get statues of any character, or you try to keep it within a couple?
I see. So I always get Power Girl, Zatanna. I'm very particular about what Wonder Woman ones I get. Catwoman. And then straying from DC, I get for Marvel, I always have to get Black Cat, Gwen Stacy. Not Spider-Gwen, just Gwen Stacy.
Yeah, what's the deal with Spider-Gwen?
I feel like I'm too old for Spider-Gwen, because I'm like, I would have loved Spider-Gwen when I was in middle school. I'd be like, yeah, she's angsty, she hates everything, she likes her headphones.
Well, is she in continuity? Is it a new, I guess?
Oh, that thing. I'm still trying to figure that out, because it's just like, dead no more. And I'm like, no, don't bring her back. I feel like, I think Greg and Phil went over this on Seller's Point. Shout out, hey guys. Russell. But they went over it. Russell, yeah. Ugh. They went over that, and I completely agree that the reason why I loved Gwen Stacy when I was a child is because I felt like she was a secret. Like, I felt she was like a secret because growing up, I had the cartoon.
Right. She wasn't mass media. She was only in the comics. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And so that always felt special to me. That's like, you know, I always romanticized it in my head as she is everything that could have made him happy. She was
right.
True happiness for him, and her loss is on his hands, and that is tragic and beautifully romantic. I don't know why I was thinking that as a child.
No, that's pretty cool. I mean, that's a good way, because that's Spider-Man. He's you. You know, we always identified with him as his character, but he's never going to be perfectly happy, or at least that's what certain line of editorial thinking has been. He's always going to be just coming up just a little bit short. And even, you know, he gets married to the redheaded model, and oh no, we can't have that. We can't have a satisfied end game to Spider-Man. He's got to always have this angst, this longing, this, I don't know, the chip on the shoulder.
Yeah, but I mean, with Gwen, it's like, I love her. Like, I love Gwen Stacy because of just the way I romanticized it growing up, and that the projections I put onto that character. And so the thing is, she's one of the few people that actually stayed dead. Spider-Gwen right. is not in the same universe, and Ultimate Gwen Stacy was also another universe. So there's something right. that's fine, but there's something about if they are seriously bringing her back, just... you know, it's like Uncle Ben stays dead. She needs to stay dead. I mean, we already did the clone thing, and that was stupid. And there's just, I mean, is she going to make out with Norman Osborn again?
Ah, yeah. See, that's the revisionist history I didn't like. The changes to this. There was no time for her to have Norman Osborn's love children in the original the way Jerry Conway and even back in the day, Stan Lee wrote Gwen, you know, oh my goodness.
Gwen was so mean.
I think that was Straczynski who changed Gwen Stacy into being an unrecognizable character back in the day. And she should have stayed dead. But I also know people who started reading Spider-Man, not the classic, you know, our 616, our old school Spider-Man that we've had since the early 60s, but people who started with Ultimate Spider-Man. So their Gwen Stacy or their expectation of Gwen is a very different thing than what you or I may have.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just like, can I please just have this one, please?
Yeah.
Like Dan's, I just feel like I feel like I'm always arguing with Dan Slott in my head.
Nobody stays dead forever.
But it's been so long. I just feel like, look, Uncle Ben and her have a long time running. Yeah. Like, let's try to, like, keep this going.
Bucky had a very long time running, and no, I don't know anybody who doesn't like the way that they brought him back. He was brilliant about it, you know. He wrote, you know, he did this kind of within the borders way to bring him back. It's like he's always been back. He wasn't Bucky. That was really cool. Great story in the original Brubaker Captain America. So speaking of which, did you grow up when you got into comics? Did you identify more with DC or with Marvel? And do you have a loyalty in general?
I am a DC person, and a lot of people have said this. I think it's a really popular phrase that, you know, or I think I might be quoting Neil Adams here because I think he pretty much put into words what I've always thought, which is that, you know, Marvel is about monsters trying not to be monsters, and DC is about heroes going beyond expectations. And there's something that's always resonated with me about Batman. And I'm saying this just throughout, like, my first introduction to heroes would be that, you know, Batman was dealt a pretty shitty hand. And then from there, he overcame it. And that is what I like about DC heroes, is that no matter what their situation is they're overcoming something and they're going to go beyond expectations. Whereas Marvel characters, they're much more flawed and they're okay with being flawed. But when they sometimes, there's just something where it's like, here's the way I put it. It's like, I love Zatanna. She is my favorite of all time. That is because I would love to be Zatanna. But on the Marvel side, you have someone like Scarlet Witch, who I really like a lot as well. But it's like, I feel like, you know, there are some days where I could be like, no more mutants to myself. Whereas, you know, at the end of the day, I really just want to be more of someone like Zatanna, who wouldn't actually go down and start to act like Scarlet Witch. Hmm. Would be one way to put it.
Okay.
It is a comparison.
It's tough because Scarlet Witch has had so many different editorial messing around with over the years. You know, she was in a relationship with Vision. She had the twins. She wished all mutants not to be around anymore. I mean, I like that the movies are keeping her pretty simple. Mm. But in comics, she's been all over the place.
She is just a hot mess.
Yeah, and a goofy-ass costume, too.
I love that goofy costume.
The original one? The classic, you know, the yeah. I don't know. She's Magneto's daughter. You're going to be messed up.
You're going to be messed up. And then that weird, like, Red Skull thing that happened with Uncanny Avengers that Rick Remender wrote was really creepy.
So, yeah, I think Bendis did the most with her in modern day to me, but there was still, she had a weird fling with Hawkeye.
Yeah. And just, I don't know, it was weird when she had the kid. I don't know.
Right.
I've only seen her as more of a woman than a girl, so the movies are kind of weird in that aspect, but I've gotten over it.
Feels like the movies, like they Marvel and Fox, well, I guess it's, yeah, Marvel and Fox made a deal. This may not be the case, and I can find out the real story, but they briefly both had Quicksilver in each of their movie, and they briefly both had Wanda in each of their movies, but maybe they made a deal like, okay, you can have Pietro and we can have Wanda, and it works out, and they're not going to fight it anymore, because technically I think Fox still has the rights. I don't know. I think it's pretty complicated.
Yeah, unless that whole thing where they made her technically, I'm a little bit behind, but I remember at one point when they're like, technically you're not Magneto's kids, and it's like,
yeah, they've changed that over the years too.
That thing has happened so many mm-hmm. times, and now I know that they're like doing a thing where she no longer has chaos magic.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just kind of like, I haven't read that yet. It's on my list to start reading, but I'm just kind of like, I like that she's chaotic and has chaos magic, and I just need to catch up. Yeah. I'm a little bit off. I think I'm off on everything.
What's your favorite Zatanna story?
Oh, the Paul Dini one, which, reminder, just so I can get this in, I am a jerk, and I forgot to include him on my favorite writers list last time, but Paul Dini, his solo Zatanna series, I believe was like 2009, 2010, is probably like my favorite Zatanna series, because it's fun. It goes into her everyday life, and then like there's little flashbacks to when she was a child and her dad's Aura and everything like that. So that was pretty sweet. And I met Stephen Rowe.
I don't know.
It's Roux. He's done some Harley stuff for Amanda and Jimmy on Harley Quinn series, but he did an amazing job on the insides, I think, for the first 12 issues or so. And he was really nice, and it was super cool to meet him a couple, like a year ago, 2 years ago or so. He ended up discounting my sketch a little bit, which was cool. But he did a Zatanna sketch for me that was amazing. And, oh, God, it was so cool to meet him, because he loves that character as much as I do, which was really super awesome. And he was telling me all about how Paul Dini and him they both knew so much about Zatanna, and that's why he felt so proud of that book, and why he was like, just like, oh, it's so cool to talk to someone that actually like remembers that, super into that, because you really know a lot about Zatanna. I'm like, yeah, I do. I love her and your work. And I, he, drew a little picture of her, like, as a kid with, like, braces. That's, like, one of my favorite images because it was so silly. But, yeah, that series was amazing.
Do you have any backwards words memorized?
No, because I am not going to do that dishonor to the English language. But it's funny because I'm not going to spoil it because I want people to actually read it. There's, like, a couple scenes in there where she cannot talk. So she has found ways to go around that because the thing that pisses me off the most is when people want to troll me and they're just like, well, what if you just put duct tape on her mouth? Then she's useless. And I'm like, oh my God, just don't even go there with me. But that does get answered in the book of what she does if she cannot speak.
What's your favorite Zatanna look?
Oh gosh. Okay. So it's really hard because there's like, the George Perez outfit, which I actually have a sketch of from George Perez, that one is really odd. That one's so silly to me. Like, she has, like,
Early 80s? Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's a scorpion, I think.
Okay.
But it looks, I just call it lobster head because it just looks hilarious to me. Like, that one's super fun. I really liked the redesign that they did with the new 52. I thought that one looked cool. Like, I thought it was very modern. Mm-hmm. But it will always be, like, the classic magician outfit.
Right, fishnets and top hat.
Yeah.
In the 70s, she had a baby blue kind of outfit, too, with the cape that was kind of subtle, but...
And then there was the weird, like black cat suit thing with the pointy shoes and the pie ponytail. That one was kind of silly, but that one is a work of its time. So I appreciate all of them, but the classic Zatanna look is always going to be the one that's my favorite.
I hope we get a real Justice League Dark project someday.
Oh, please. Oh, you know, please.
You got to hope it's coming. I think eventually...
Del Toro's out, so I don't really know who... That was just such a perfect idea, and the fact it's not happening, I am just kind of like bitter grapes about any other...
He gets attached to a lot of stuff, but he quits and never finishes certain things too. So I try not to get too excited if somebody brings his name into it. Because although the Hellboys are great and Pan's Labyrinth is an excellent movie, he just doesn't seem to stick around on most of the stuff he's attached to.
Yeah, but that was him directing those characters.
Sure, yeah, he could have had some pretty visionary looks at characters like. I don't know. Would he add the Frankenstein character that's in there? Which maybe even Dead Man, Constantine, characters like that. Yeah, so that's kind of a missed opportunity. Hopefully that will be with Jeff Johns at the helm. DC will bring that project back. But I enjoyed the Constantine TV show, believe it or not. Not a lot of people did. I would have liked to have seen her pop up there.
Yes, I enjoyed the Constantine television show too. I just felt that it could have done better if it didn't have the network limitations.
Sure. And it was on Friday nights along with Hannibal, and you watched the Hannibal show, and it had almost nothing. Nothing was not in that show. I think it was at 10 o'clock, but it was very bloody, psychologically very creepy, and Constantine felt kind of neutered a little bit by that.
He couldn't smoke. He just had smoke around him.
Yeah. And still, Matt Ryan did a pretty decent job with that character. I know Constantine, great. To me, has always been Sting, because that's what Alan Moore based him on, was Sting from Quadrophenia or the early Police days. But I liked what Matt Ryan did with the Constantine character. Certainly better than our friend Keanu.
But no, let's not talk about
that. That movie never happened. Yet another DC movie misstep.
I ask bars to change the channel when that movie comes on. Do you know how many bars I've been where that movie comes on and I just like...
Kind of randomly on.
I think like one time actually like I'm like, hey, can I give you like $2 to just change the channel? And I think they did it.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I just hate
that movie. Hate it.
Even Gavin Rossdale as the angel.
Oh God.
Yeah.
God, that movie is such a piece of its time, and it is such a piece of. Oh my gosh.
I think it's okay if you don't consider him. If he's not John Constantine, you know, if he maybe change his name to something.
It had Shia LaBeouf in it, too.
Oh, you're right. Damn it.
The movie's awful.
So.
I can't get over that movie.
So, what are some other comics you're reading these days?
I see. I'm super behind, but I think the last thing I caught up on was probably like Wonder Woman Earth One.
Grant Morrison.
I you know what? That was a good starter book, but I felt like it wasn't really a complete story. So I'm excited for what it's starting. Like, it was a good introduction book, but there's obviously that didn't feel like a complete one thing. So I'm excited because they're going to continue doing that. I mean, we have Rebirth happening next week, too.
And that's exciting to me because I think we're getting Wonder Woman is drawn, written by Rucka. And that's
Sharp.
Yeah.
He's doing the art.
And then.
And Frank Cho is posting some really pretty preview pictures of his, I think it's going to be issue 4 variant cover, which looks pretty sweet. So I'm excited for that because I'm glad that they're getting the Finches off because they did an awful job.
Yeah, I know a lot of people, well, Azrael and Chiang were kind of, not iconic, but they were definitive for Wonder Woman for a long time, for the New 52 run. And that to me was one of the top runs of that concept of New 52. And then when Azrael was gone to replace him with David Finch's wife, it just wasn't a good book. Feels to me DC, you know, DC's trying new things, but Vertigo's in the toilet right now.
Oh, that
It feels to me like DC is kind of, I don't know, the comic book line is struggling. If you look at their market share, Marvel is way, way ahead. And DC's rebooting every few years and just trying to make sure their properties stay relevant. And Batman has. I mean, we look at Batman and Justice League. I think those books are always going to sell well. They're always going to be attract quality creators to them. But as a whole, their line is not selling very well. And I'm curious to hopefully that Rebirth will come and maybe restore some of that. But I'm fairly skeptical because I too am a DC guy. I grew up on DC comic books. Mm-hmm. Justice League 200 was my big aha comic as a kid with the origin of Justice League and then all the new generation of Justice Leaguers in there, and great George Perez art. So I identify as a DC guy, even though I read a lot of Marvel. Do you get Marvel Unlimited?
See, that's the thing. I'm going to sign up this month because...
Me too. It's the best deal in comics.
I'm looking at the prices, and I'm just like, and I think that's the thing that is helping Marvel is the fact that, you know, people go to see the movies.
Yes.
And... Sorry, I'm very critical of local comic book stores. I think that you guys all need to step your game up because I'm a jerk. But I think the thing is, like, because they don't want to deal with that intimidation factor, and they don't have to deal with people who have, like, the thing is, you can just go and get Marvel Unlimited and try to figure out on your own or use the internet to figure out, like, hey, I really thought that person was cool. I want to learn more about them.
Right.
Well, you can do that through Marvel Unlimited. If you just saw a DC movie and you're just like, the cyborg guy looks kind of cool. I wonder what his deal is. First, you have to find a local comic book shop. You have to find a good local comic book shop that isn't filled with jerks or actually has, like, you know, keeps things in stock. Because,
yeah.
I mean, there's some places where it's like they're sweet as pie, but they have nothing to offer you.
Sure. I've never yet been to a perfect comic book store. Even Powell's Books has a great comic section in Portland, but, you know, either they have, I don't know, there are compromises in comics retail, and it's tough. I've never owned a store. I've never even worked at a comic shop, but...
Escapist Comics in... Berkeley, California comes really close, and Dr. Comics and Mr. Games in, I think, Oakland comes really close to. But the thing is, I don't know what goes on behind
sure.
the scenes.
Because but just as a customer.
Yeah, like, I mean, before I started working there, one of the places I work, I technically consider it the best, like, selection.
I think every comic shop should have a specialist, a new reader specialist who, you know, he won't necessarily take the whole time to say, this is the history of that character. We've all been in a comic shop where there's that conversation going on, where there's somebody teaching this prospective customer all the stuff. But, and I've seen it at multiple stores my whole life, Saudi Comics and Comics back in the 80s. But every comic shop should have that salesperson, that emissary who can direct somebody to exactly what's going to be their gateway to buying more comics, to getting more into the characters. DC.com, DCComics.com has done an okay job, and their app is okay. You know, they're always, if you're looking for a character's origin, it's on there. But Marvel Unlimited is so rich, and I mean, there's new stuff on there every week. I got it. I bought a 1-year subscription for $70, and I don't regret it at all.
Did you get the cool little Ultron figure?
No, I didn't. I didn't get any of the perks. I just got the signed up for the one-time deal, and I don't know if it was a special promo. I didn't do a free month or anything like that. I just said this is it, and I did buy it as soon as I got an iPad Pro. I get razzed on for talking about my iPad Pro a lot, but it's been the difference maker for me in digital comics. I still buy, you know, paper comics all the time. My saver yesterday. But Marvel Unlimited, I don't mind reading digital comics with that big window of the iPad.
It's weird for Marvel comics. I feel like I read Marvel comics more casually, so I'm a little bit less like, I'm all right reading them digitally. There's something about DC. Like I said, I'm a DC person, and I don't know why, but I like reading my DC stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just because I care more about the characters, and there's something about reading something digitally where it doesn't stick in my brain as much as, like, reading something in front of me. But, I don't know. Speaking of print, I finally got, they released, I think we talked about this last time, about how much I like EC books.
Yes.
They finally released some stuff. Dark Horse got the license from Gemstone for the EC archives. And they put out a new edition of Shock and Suspense stories. They put the last volume out, which was pretty cool. I know you guys know you want to talk about comics, but that's something else I read recently that's print. And there are certain things like that where I'm just like, yeah, I'm cool with dropping a lot of money. But I've been seeing the prices on some of the books lately for the new DC Rebirth, and I'm like, I don't know how I feel about paying that much.
Twice a month, you know, yes, for some of these books.
And that's where I don't know, because I know, like, Marvel for a long time was more expensive than DC.
Right, and DC made the big holding the line at $2.99.
No, you
that?
Didn't.
I did. Not for long.
I think I still have this, like, promotional poster somewhere, too, for that. And
I do, too. I've enraged
it. Treasure it.
I have it. Yeah, I had it in my garage. Anyway. So we are up against a break. We're going to come back and enjoying talking with Steph. And we're probably going to talk a little bit more about comics retail. But we're going to delve deep into comics art and the process of being a comics artist. Because that's something I don't have a lot of background at. And Steph is going through now. So when we return, we will take that on. See you in a little bit.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out Scott Criscullo and me on the Mothership, The Place to Be Podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with Main Event, Mission Indie Possible, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. And relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We got sports covered, too, with the Sports Evolution Mega Show with Scott, Dr. G, Cowboy, and Cowboy Sr., The Kings of Sport, led by Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, as well as the NBA Team Podcast and the TJ McClune Show. PTBN tackles pop culture and irreverence with Richard and the Mailman, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, and if you like a hybrid of all of this in list form, check out Jordan Duncan's Rank and File. All of these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. We want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation podcast network. That's the PWO PTBN podcast network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickenspan, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the reaction shows with good old Will from Texas. We got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow. Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show. Tag Teams back again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze. And a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
Here at Conversation Comics with Stephanie Holly. It is the week of Extreme Rules here, and so do you have any picks? Do you have any favorite matches you're going to be watching?
Okay, this one, I'm excited for New Day and Vaudevillains. I think that no matter what happens, it's going to be entertaining.
Excellent. Did you see the promo on Monday, this past Raw,
yes,
where they went back in time? That was cool.
Okay, that was super silly. And then I'm kind of interested in seeing the Charlotte and Natalia match go down, and I think it's, I'm sorry, but when Stephanie slapped Ric Flair the other night, oh God, that was hilarious.
It was pretty funny. Rick sold the heck out of it, and you know, he won't get any revenge on Stephanie because that's the way things work.
Although there's a theory too. Did you read the theories about that?
No, go ahead.
So a lot of people have been noticing that Stephanie is getting a little bit more beefed up lately with her arms. Her arms are showing a little bit more definition, and so there's some people thinking that what's going to happen is that there's going to be something between Stephanie and Charlotte.
Okay.
And then what's going to happen is that's going to be the thing after this until they're going to give Sasha Banks, everyone thinks that Sasha Banks is going to be taking the women's championship come SummerSlam. That's the theory that I've been reading a lot about, which I kind of like that idea. I really like the idea of Charlotte versus Stephanie, too.
Oh, I don't know. I've never seen – I mean, Steph versus Trish back in the day was an excellent match. But in general, it's a very WWE thing. I don't think she's a great worker, but as far as her matches aren't always great. But Steph is a great character.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's definitely – has the ring presence, but we'll see if she can put together a match in this day and age. That would be interesting to see her versus Charlotte. I kind of want her away from the wrestling still. I don't necessarily want her. If she's going to get in the ring, I want it to be a big deal, like against Ronda Rousey or something like that.
I like that idea too.
And it would be a big deal if she were to come in and face Charlotte, but you know, the top of the WWE women's division is so loaded with the three horsewomen of Bayley,
she needs to be
soon. Yeah, Becky and Charlotte and Sasha, that it's nice because now they're seeing, well, who else can work? And Natalia can go. You know, she's definitely strong and has, she's been changing her look a little bit. She's pretty good competition with those three. Paige, hopefully, I think she can. She was the first NXT diva to come up, but I don't know if she's long for this world. Have you heard the latest about Paige?
I know that she's been. I know she was at a Wizard World and said something about how she's not happy with the booking.
Uh huh.
And the thing is, I really don't know what they can do with her. I don't like. I mean, it's weird. It's like, okay, you're goth. Okay, that happened. That's old news. Like, that's kind of old. I don't know what they can do with that character. Mm-hmm. I mean, I like her, but I don't know what's here for her. I want to see Bayley come into Raw, and I think it'd be cool to, like, based off that fight the other night on NXT with Nia Jax and Bayley, I like Nia Jax. I really like about Asuka, too, is that they transcend that look and that people get super into them, and it'd just be really nice. It'd be really refreshing to see more of that on Raw. Although it's weird to me because Paige looks like Paige doesn't look enhanced,
right?
But she has the goth thing going for her.
She has a well-defined character that's different than the rest of them.
Yeah, and so it's weird how I don't know what Paige has over. I think maybe it's just the goth thing, and they needed to fill that kind of character look, and maybe that's why Vince was okay with that. But
do you think that the network, not the network, but do you think that the Divas? I keep saying Divas. I'm sorry, the women's division in WWE. They've got me programmed. Do you think that they could support a one-hour weekly show, just the women of the main roster?
Of what it currently is?
Yeah, you've got, let's kind of run down who we've got. We've got the three girls at the top. We've got Becky, mm-hmm. Sasha, and Charlotte. We've got Paige. We've got Natalia. We've got the Dana Brooke.
Emma.
Emma's hurt right now. She hurt her back the other day. We still kind of have Alicia Fox hanging out there somewhere. We still have Summer Rae.
Is Naomi still there? I can't remember.
She is, and Tamina, who is the daughter of Jimmy Snuka. She's there too. I think that rounds out the whole division. There's still Nikki Bella may still come back and wrestle, but Brie is gone.
I think it's time for the Bellas to move on.
Yeah.
I think, they did their thing. They did a good job, but I feel like they would be better spent on the E! Network because it just seems like, they really were part of that whole Diva brand,
right.
And I just kind of feel
the face of it.
Yeah, and so I kind of feel like, okay, maybe it's time that they moved on. I mean, I'm not saying, they have to or that I'm going to be upset if they're still there. I just kind of feel like, no. And the thing is, with the idea of doing a hour-long program with just the Raw women, I don't feel that I don't feel like their characters are developed enough to really provide an hour of solid entertainment. I could imagine me just sitting here skipping through the
right.
people I find boring. And so if that's my mindset going into it, then I don't think that's a viable use of finances and time to just have something that's subpar that would be a big deal. I think if you're going to put that many resources into something like that, it needs to be big or it just shouldn't be done at all.
Okay. So not just on the network, but something that could be on USA. Or
yeah, but it's like even on the network, it's like I don't feel that like there's enough there. I think unless you bumped up some of the NXT women onto
mm-hmm.
there, then you aren't going to really have
right.
a lot of interest.
Yeah, I don't think you could do a whole show with just what they've got on the main roster. I think you would have to bring in, Bayley certainly. And
yeah,
if you have Bayley up there, you could at least have three decent matches.
Exactly. And I think the other thing is I was just talking to someone about this the other day. I'm just like, Nia Jax is one of the only women who is of larger stature.
Right. But
and
she's,
I think,
go ahead.
I think they need to have another woman of larger stature too, because I'm just like, you can't have her just be the only big baddie. Like
mm-hmm.
you have to have, that's kind of how I feel they make her come off. Like just the big intimidating one, and I'm
right.
like, okay, but you know what? There's several big intimidating ones in the men's division.
Tamina, to me, she's very similar to Tamina. Is they're trying to go like Tamina who can wrestle. That's
yeah.
that's more of a thing instead of being a thug, which is kind of how they use Tamina Snuka now. So maybe they'll get their own special, a la the NXT specials on the network. Maybe they would do a tryout with just the women's show, and it would maybe combine the rosters. I could get behind that. A one-time only thing to see. Yeah, that would be kind of cool.
I want an Oscar reality show first. I think it'd be because she keeps posting on Twitter about how she's learning English and everything, and I'm like, that would make a great reality show that I would watch on NXT. Is just seeing Asuka and her opinions on being a female switching from the Japanese division over to here. I think that's probably, I think that'd be a really fascinating story about learning about the process of everything she's going through right now. And her tweets are like really entertaining. So I would love to see that in a reality show, but I'm not sure how. I don't know if she doesn't seem like the person that would do that sort of thing at the same time.
I wonder how involved, have you ever seen the Nakamura things where you see Nakamura behind the scenes? Mm-hmm. There's a guy named Sho Funaki. Do you know who that is? Who was in Kai and Tai, and he still works for the company as a translator. He still comes in. And so when there's Japanese talent brought into WWE, he works as their emissary or their translator, which is kind of cool that he's still around, you know?
Yeah.
So it would be heavy on Funaki. He's one of my favorites, actually. His Kai and Tai tag team from the late 90s, early 2000s was kind of a guilty pleasure of mine. So, all right, well, we better get back to comics.
Comics, yes.
I think we alienate the comics guys when we talk wrestling, and the wrestling guys are kind of like, well,
they're not the like, is it
wrestling
in there?
Experts. So we were talking earlier about swag and statues, and during the break, I went to the mail, and my Mego Aquaman figure that I've been wanting for years and years finally showed up. I found one I could afford. And Yay. It's in pretty good shape. It's not in original packaging, but it is from 74. I checked the figure, you know, underneath the costume, and he's got the Mego print, copyright 1974. Apparently, it's not original gloves or original A logo, but still, it's up there on my shelf proudly. I used to have a lot more statues and figures, but when you get kids, it's like, you know, that priority shifts quite a bit. So I still have all my old Superman things. I used to be a Superman collector primarily. Now I'm more of an Aquaman collector, which is a weird thing to collect. But I used to, as a kid, because I was a blondie, I used to get, you know, oh, you're Aquaman. I'm Superman. I'm Batman. You're Aquaman. Okay, fine. You know, on your trampoline wrestling matches and stuff like that.
The player is Kai Aquaman. Did you get that one? That one's pretty cool looking.
I saw the Kotobukiya one.
Okay.
I saw that one. I'm really a fan of the traditional Aquaman look with the orange and the green, and that's a, you know, if you give him too much bling, it's not Aquaman to me so much, but yeah.
I like the water effects that he came with. Mm. Like, the water effects looked really cool, but the whole point of the PlayArts Kai DC thing is, like, everything is a variant. It's a different, it's like
right.
a take
Elseworlds
on...
or something.
Yeah, but I mean, I really like my Supergirl one that I got. I still need to get several other PlayArts Kai, but that's not my company, really.
All right, so what do you like? Do you have a favorite thing, like, no matter what is coming out from a particular line, you're going to look at it a little better? You have a favorite?
I like to save up for sideshows, because sideshow collectibles is the most expensive yet beautiful work out there. I mean, I'm debating about the Power Girl that they came out with recently, the premium format. It's like, I think, $400 or $500. That'd Ooh. Be really cool Ooh. To own. Yeah, that one's like a little bit of a, do I really want to spend $500? But it looks so cool. But the one that I'm eyeing from Sideshow right now is the Black Cat J. Scott Campbell statue, because I have the Gwen Stacy one, and that is probably one of my favorites right now. Well, I mean, it's been my favorite for a very long time. There's just something about it being like my first really big sideshow, because I got my first sideshow figure was the Vampirella Tune one, which was, I think, about like $100. It's kind of small and it's all cartoony looking.
Huh.
And then I have the Adam Hughes Black Cat sideshow statue, where she's like got her arms up and she's like dropping down into a like warehouse to steal something. That's one of the few ones where my dad's like, why can't you buy nicer things like that? And I'm like, because you don't want to know how much it costs. But sideshow is definitely up there. That's something that's like not something I can do often. The thing I keep my eye out on regularly is Kotobukiya. I think the last ones that I bought were the Black Canary and the Poison from Street Fighter.
How much are those shoot typically?
Okay, so the thing is, you got to get them early when they're about $60 to $80.
Yeah, that's what I've seen too.
Otherwise, if you don't get them in a certain time frame, they will jump up to $200, $300. That's why I don't have Black Cat It's why I don't have Catwoman, and it's why I also don't have Emma Frost. Oh, God, that Emma Frost one goes for like $400.
Holy cow. Times.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, the clear one, you could probably nab for about $200, but the regular one goes, it's much more expensive. But I mean, Kotaro Bukiya is one I go for. The DC collectible stuff I get a lot. There's some places that have really good low prices if you wait a while.
Really?
The DC ones, yeah. Like they're, I'm not gonna say where.
Okay. Yeah.
Secret I want will the be price. I want the price to stay low on this one.
Yeah.
Until I get paid. I might as well just say the Amazon actually had the Catwoman DC CoverGirl statue for. Or not. I don't can't remember if they're calling it just DC Women's line now.
Uh-huh.
Because CoverGirls, they usually assign an artist to it.
Right. And that's mostly the Adam Hughes stuff was.
Yeah. CoverGirl. And now it's DC Collectibles, and all of the full statues are drawn by Art Germ, who also works for Sideshow. There is the Catwoman one from a couple months ago that's going for about $60, mm-hmm. down from $124. So that one looks pretty awesome. And then Power Girl is coming out this month, so I got to get that. It's Power Girl.
Classic costume?
Well, it's the DC. It's like the one that came after the redesign, because, like, in technically it looks the same. I mean, things might, like, lines might be a little bit thinner, mm-hmm. like her belt may be thinner or something. But it's classic costume in the new 52 style. That was done by Art Germ. That's coming out this month. We also, the Zatanna Batman the Animated Series figure got pushed back to August last time I checked. That was one I was really hoping for. I mean, I collect everything. I don't get into the Marvel Legends figures. I know a lot of people that get super into that, but there's just something about spending $24 on just a action figure.
Right, a 3-inch whatever.
Well, I think they're about, like, 6 inches. I have a couple. Right now, I think I have, like, Misty Knight, because they don't make a lot of Misty Knight figures. I got one of her. I got Spider-Woman, Scarlet Witch, and that's all I really have from that line.
Are these the kind of figures that come with a random part? So if you collect the whole line, you get that extra figure or that extra...
The extra thing. Yeah, usually what I do is I just buy the figure, I open it up, and then I sell the extra part online for, like, $3, because I'm not going to buy all of them. I don't have the resources to do that. But then there's also... The other thing I like to do is I like to get not so much comic book related, but anime stuff, is I collect a lot of Sailor Moon figures from... And then I like to collect from a company called Figma. And what they do is that they make anime figurines, but they're, like, highly the articulation in them is really nice. Like, they're super, like, you can change their faces, you can change how their hands are gripped. There's so much customization to those that I like. And then this other character might get me in trouble that I collect.
Is it something pornographic?
If you Google it,
okay.
Otherwise, it's more like a risque statue. There's not any that, like, it's a weird character. So there's this character named Super Sonico, who is a lot more PG. I mean, well, she's not as sexualized. There's still some statues of her where it's like, ooh, I don't collect her specifically. I collect her friend, Super Pachaco, who is a heavy set anime girl.
Okay.
That wears a bikini and other, like, little outfits. You know what? The concept to me is it is so, like, ridiculous. It's kind of like I collect those Dynamite used to do the risque covers of, like, Warlords of Mars and stuff.
Sure, yeah.
I used to collect those because they were just silly to me, and I feel like, you know, something like that is not going to – those things are done. So I might as well get the last of them because it's really something of its time. And I feel like Super Pachaco is a heavy set anime character, which you don't see often. And she's also, she's just in these ridiculous, like, very risque poses that are just kind of funny to me. And so I collect those too, because...
Is there a lot of merch for that, or a lot of swag?
Super Pachaco, not as much. It's mostly Super Sonico. And the thing that I hate is normally I like to collect things when it has a story. But there was an anime for Super Sonico, but Super Pachaco wasn't in it. So she's just a figure character.
Okay.
Which is, I don't know if that makes it better or worse, but there's just something really ridiculous. Like, there's one of her that came out recently that I want to get where it's like she's in a bikini and holding a hot dog. Like, it's just so dumb. It's so dumb and of its time that I'm like, this is so ridiculous that I kind of just have to laugh at this and get it because there's nothing else out there like it.
Did you see the trailer for the new Voltron?
Oh, is there a new one?
There is a brand new. Yeah, there was one a couple years ago that's out there, but there's a new one that's done by Netflix that's coming out that's more of a return to the classic Voltron.
I saw the first trailer for that, like, I think in September,
uh-huh,
something. It looks interesting. I'm very picky about anime. I mean, I enjoyed, like, the original Voltron.
Right, and that's what I'm hoping we get a return to.
I wonder if they're going to have Nanny die. that's my question. I've been trying to get into Gundam more lately and watch it correctly. Because I think, like, with Toonami when I was a kid, it would just randomly on.
Yeah, they weren't in sequence.
So I never got a full story, but that'd be cool. And I wish someone would bring back Record of Lodos War.
I don't know that one.
It was, like, pretty much some guys created this anime after being influenced by a bunch of, like, Dungeons & Dragons stuff. So it was, like, an anime made in, like, I think the early 90s was the correct timing of just this D&D-inspired anime where you've got, like, the knight is the main character named Parn, and then you have Deedlit, his side lady, who's, like, an elf, and they have all these, like, they meet all these characters, like, berserkers and rogues and stuff, and they go on these battles, and they have to save, like, the cleric character because the bad guy is going to use her energy and blah, 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 blah. Like, I liked it a lot as a child. Getting older, it doesn't stay as much for me, but that and Escaflowne is probably the only mech anime I really enjoyed as a kid.
I think I have a prescription for that one.
Escaflowne does sound like a prescription. No, that's, like, my favorite of all time for mech animes because it's the only one I was able to watch in sequence as a child.
Mm-hmm.
It was a huge deal to me when the movie came out to America. I used to drag my dad to Suncoast every week.
I remember that in the mall.
Yes, I used to drag my dad there, and it drove him insane. And because we'd ask, and because it was a time when things were just literally coming from Japan, and they had no exact date.
Sure.
My dad was just like, you know, I don't care how much it is, just, I will buy it, you know what, I will buy it online because I'm tired of coming here every weekend and finding out it's not released. I think that was, like, one of our first online purchases ever as a family.
Man, I was lucky if my dad would buy me a comic, you know.
My dad is just like,
I grew up in the 75-cent age of comics. But, oh, it's funny. As an artist, what would you say constitutes good or bad comic book art? And I mean storytelling, not pinups or covers or anything like that, just in comic books themselves.
Okay, so this is a little bit weird for me because I don't – my art's kind of weird. I'm, like, slowly learning everything step by step, so it's a little bit weird to be critical of other people.
Okay.
That I think have had a lot more time to put into things. But I think a really good example of good storytelling would be the Grant Morrison Frank Quietly multiversity issue. I'm trying to remember.
Right, I have that.
Yeah, let me find out which one that
I'm
was.
I'm looking at my hardcover right now. There it is. It's in there.
Yeah, that one, that story was amazing. I don't have it in front of me.
Have you read All-Star Superman?
Yes, I would say that one was pretty good too. I think Frank Quietly and Grant Morrison make an excellent team.
I do too.
It packs, it was called, that issue was called Pax Americana, and there's a page where the stairs, just that page of running down the stairs. It's like, running down the stairs is not something that has to be in a story, but the pace really puts, like, the way it's drawn puts your mind in a place, and you can kind of, like, follow, like the way your eyes shift into the page and you get into everything, I think quietly has a gift of, even though, you know, that panel isn't necessary to the story, it's necessary to getting your eye and your mind entrapped in the story.
I like We Three. Have you ever read that comic?
Oh my gosh.
As well. That's a sentimental favorite to me. It's very sad.
It took me so long to get the original issues.
Oh yeah.
So long.
I was lucky to buy them when they came out, and I still have them. I haven't bought a trader collection of that, but I should, because it's one of those that's just such a perfect story. Vertigo Golden Age, you know?
Yeah. And I think a lot of, I think the thing Vertigo had a lot of, Vertigo early artists had a lot to do with shifting how things are perceived in comics and storytelling. And I mean, Frank Quietly was more 2000s than that. But
right.
Who did the art for Fables?
Fables was a guy named Mark Buckingham.
Yeah.
He was the primary artist with Steve Lealoa. Buckingham, British artist who did Marvel Man, Miracle Man with Neil Gaiman.
Of course. Yeah, that's...
He was consistently the artist for Fables, which was great because he had this very strong run all the way through with the same artist, which I love when you can do that.
And I like the way that the panels were, the panel placement was good, and I like the way that, like, you know, sometimes things would come outside the panels and, like, more, like, when things were going to be mystical, you had, you know, fog going around, or you had something that kind of created this dimension. And I think Jack Kirby's drawings, his art, I feel, had an impact on that idea of being so dynamic.
Sure.
I feel that is something a lot of comic artists, when I feel like when they embrace that, they really are embracing something that gets me into a book. It's just that idea of, like, bam, like, off the page look. But then I feel like there's people that don't do that, but like Capullo. Capullo is a really good example, I think, of like someone who's not, like, he doesn't go outside the lines, but I mean the way that he has the characters' dialogue and the way they interact and have facial expressions with each other works well. Tony S. Daniel is a really another good guy, like, on that. It's strange to me because for a very long time I was just reading comics to do my job.
Right.
Where I was just reading everything trying to collect it all.
That must be a terrible, terrible thing to do.
It was.
No.
I mean, having to read something you don't like and then having to pay for it too, like, yeah, guess what? Surprise, comic book stores, comics are not free to the employees.
No.
Depending on where you work, they might let you, like, read them in your downtime, but depending on who your boss is, usually you have to pay.
And a good comic book shop shouldn't have any downtime. You should be constantly tweaking things, or if there is downtime, get caught up with back issues, you know. You should have a system.
Yeah, right. Fixing comic suite, making sure the saver forms are correct, making sure that if someone can't get a variant cover, making sure that no one promises them that variant cover. The pro.
What's the most awkward interaction you ever had with a customer in comics retail? Just a customer.
God, there's so many.
Yeah.
This woman who I think was being abused.
Wow.
She came into the store and began to freak out. Her boyfriend was a bit of a douche, and we had dealt with him, and he had an attitude because, you know, he came in like 6 months after Gambit came out and, like, was pissed that we didn't have issue number one, and they're on, like, issue six now. So he was a tool. And then we let him create a saver for whatever reason, and his girlfriend comes in to pick it up, and she starts to panic. And she's like, where are the plastic covers? Why is this open? Why are you touching the books? Why are you touching? Where are your gloves? And it's like, I'm sorry, what? She's like, these aren't right. These are not, they don't come like this. I'm like, ma'am, actually comic books are shipped like this and you put them in the covers. We have covers right there if you'd like to do it. But I've never heard of a comic book store handling comics with gloves. I mean, if that's concern to you, maybe this isn't, she's like, he's going to be so angry. And I was like, oh my gosh, this
wow.
is, she just looked so frightened and panicked. That would probably be the most awkward situation. Okay. But I mean, there's lots of awkward situations with cussers, but I feel like once people get used to you, because there were like a couple people at the comic store that it's like, you know, they had little personality quirks. And it wasn't until they realized that, like, you know, they can talk to you that they would start to open up. But it wasn't so as awkward as that woman, because there was no resolve or like under, like, the only reason I could think about why she was panicking
right.
was like a very bad
what's waiting for her when she has
but,
home.
Yeah, and that's horrific. So there's yeah. no like resolve to that aside from, oh my gosh, like, what is this lady's life? That
wow.
was, that one was really bad. But otherwise, I mean, you know, people, you deal with people that get upset really easily, but that was the only one where it was like, there's people that just have bad days and you can just shrug that off. I mean, that's something that I've come to cope with
sure.
customer service, is just someone's having a bad day or someone's grumpy, someone's life isn't going well. But I mean, it's like you get lots of interesting people in comic book stores.
Do you have a dream job you'd like someday in comics?
I'd either want to work in marketing or I'd like to own my own shop. The only thing about owning your own comic book store is I would want to create something with lots of inventory. And I would like, the thing is, if you want to do that, you have to make sure you're in a proper location that it, where people want all that inventory. I don't want to be one of those little like hole in the wall places that has like maybe one IKEA bookshelf of trades.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't, and then just gets new stuff, but only gets like DC and Marvel. Like that's kind of the store that that's my local store. And I don't really go there that often because, you know, I want to read weird things like Zombie Tramp that they don't carry that are funny and silly, but you know, not everyone knows about that book or certain other books, so
I'm,
they only keep Image, DC, and Marvel and
yeah.
stuff.
I'm glad you said Image. I find I'm buying as much Image as the other two these days, just because that's where my market is. It's where, you know, the creators that I'm interested are have gone. So, you know, when I'm looking for a store or when I'm just going in, I've already perused the previews. I kind of know what's coming out. I get an email that tells me everything that's coming out this week. But sometimes at store A or store B, you just don't see specific things. But I have pretty mainstream tastes too. If I didn't, I don't know what I'd do. Well, that's what the internet is for.
Yeah. Oh, and Dark Horse. And Dark Horse is pretty important, I would say.
Used to be a lot more important, but
and there's still stuff I get from them. Like the thing is, like when I get Dark Horse books now, it's usually not series; it's usually miniseries.
Right.
It's their indie stuff. Lacey, I'm excited for Paybacks, which I think was part of the Free Comic Book Day stuff.
Huh.
Because there was this one book called Buzzkill. Yeah, Buzzkill. That was kind of interesting, and it's about a guy that gets superpowers every time he drinks, smokes, or takes any type of substance, and he's trying to get clean, and they're pretty, he has this weird, like, Doctor Strange sobriety counselor, or mentor. I'm not familiar with the correct terminology for the AA thing, but he's pretty much that, and they're making I believe the book is about those, the offside characters, and them creating, like, a team of just goofy, wacky characters. So I'm excited to read that from Dark Horse when it comes out. But yeah, I don't know. Image is really weird for me. And I know this is not going to make me popular.
That's okay.
But the thing, there's some... I feel like a lot of the creators for Image, like, I'll like their stuff. But they are so caught up in Twitter that it's like... They sometimes talk too much.
Right, and so you can't separate their Twitter persona from their work?
Yeah,
okay.
And I mean, I actually just stopped following certain Image artists on Twitter because I'm just like, you guys are kind of like full of yourself, and you kind of sound like dicks right now. Like, so I don't really know. It just makes it kind of unlikable. And it's like, why? If you're going to be like a jerk to someone that's just asking you a question, you could just like, you know, not respond
yeah.
to the question. Or like, instead of feeling like you can, it's weird. I feel like Image in a way some of the people that are currently writers there, it's like, and I've felt this way since like the new comic boom has happened, is that you have a lot of new readers who, not all new readers, let me just make that clear, just some of them, it's like they do not have, they come from a different background that I feel like reader, early readers before, you know, we all came from kind of a weird place. It was very common to not be the popular kid.
Sure. Or, yeah, absolutely.
There's a reason you got into comics, and most of the time it was because you probably weren't the most popular person at school, and you probably may not have come from the best background. Like, you got into comics as an escape, and I feel like a lot of these people that are coming in now have, they don't read it because they want an escape. They want to read it for fun. Like, in a weird way, like, it's not that mindset that I feel people such as myself have, where it's like, I want to get into this because I want to forget about things.
Right. I think that's what video games are for now.
Yeah.
Those kids are gravitating towards online video games or even just single player video games, and they get lost, they escape that way.
Yeah, and so with these new, like, image type people, they just are like, if you don't like what I like, well, fuck you, you're a piece of shit. And it's just like, whoa. It's like, if you don't agree with them, it's like you're not welcome at the popular kids' table. And so there's something about that entitlement where I'm just like, look, I like comics just like you like comics. Why can't we all just get along? So what if you don't read the same thing I read? I'm not coming in here and shitting on sex criminals, which, I mean, I actually like sex criminals, but I'm not.
Hey, we should clarify that that's a comic book.
That's a comic book, yes. It's an image book.
Yeah, those aren't actual people that you would be doing that to.
No, like, yeah, like, I'm not, like, trashing on your books. And so there is a weird thing that I think comes with the new type of image reader that it's, like, just be a little bit nicer. Like,
interesting.
And that's kind of what I get from that crowd. And
myself, I don't see it honestly as much from this side. Yeah. But I also, I'm not reading every single high profile image book that's out there. I'm reading stuff like, you know, all the Ed Brubaker things, The Fade Out, his criminal things. I'm also reading a book called Black Magic, Greg Rucka, which is really good. Mm-hmm. And Lazarus and Velvet. I mean, it's mostly Greg Rucka and Ed Brubaker.
Solid dudes.
You know, they're not high profile jerks or anything like that.
Yeah, they're pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
But another thing that I just wanted to point out really quick on that storytelling thing.
Yes.
Okay, so there's one that I want to bring up. The Pro.
Is that Gail? Who wrote that?
No, that is Garth Ennis and Amanda Connor.
Okay,
about the...
that's right. Amanda did write it. It's about a super-powered prostitute?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's a very comedic book, and I feel the storytelling panels in that are kind of great. I mean, it's very crude. I wouldn't let, like, a child ever go near this book.
No.
Would be the best way to put it. But that book, I feel like, is a really good example. Maybe not of the deepest storytelling, but of a comedic, like... a good, funny story that I think really fits, the art fits. And that's what I think Amanda Connor is really good at, is something where it's like, I don't know, and her Power Girl run.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, that's one of the things she said, as you said, got you in, like, really were the hooks. Are there any sacred cows of comics that you just don't get? Any comics that, you know, everybody holds up as this pinnacle of the art form, and it just goes something you just don't relate to, or something you don't understand why it's awesome?
Watchmen.
Really?
And I think I know why I don't get it. And it's because it was a book that I, you know, everyone said, oh my God, it'll be amazing. It's going to change your life. It is the most prolific thing you will ever read. They talked about it like it was the Bible itself. And,
did you read it before you saw the movie?
Yes.
Okay.
But still, it had all of that, like, talk around it. And then I read it when I was, like, maybe, like... 14, 15, and it was cool, and I enjoyed it, but the idea that it was the end-all, be-all of everything was just, I just feel like, yeah, it was a good book, it was well-written, it was interesting, but it did not change my life in the way that so many people say that it is just changes everything you see. It's like, not really. My life isn't changed by that at all. Like, I just kept being an angsty teenager. I didn't really reflect on things anymore. So then I did regularly. So that's one of those ones where I just kind of felt like there was so much hype, but to me, it just didn't resonate. And I think it's just me, because I know there's so many people that disagree that I'm like, I'm not going to have that argument because obviously it's just something I don't understand.
I think the thing with Watchmen is we've had so many books in response to it, or so many people who've been influenced by that, that we've gone other places since then. But most of the people I know who got into it read it within, you know, 87 to 95. Those
that makes
eras.
More sense.
So, and you just didn't have a whole lot of amazing comics back then, that or of that level anyway. You had Watchmen and The Dark Knight and things like Year One. But it was the first one that was just like, this is clearly on another level. Okay, I need to reread this. And then you notice the subtleties in the art and subtexts and then metaphors, and then you pick up on things you didn't even see were happening the third or fourth time. But I think I stopped reading it on a regular basis. I used to read it every year or so for a while. And then in the late 90s, I think I just, like, there's too many other things to keep up with. You know, I have the Absolute. I haven't looked at it yet. I just have my old trade too. And I have the original issues. And let's see, what else do I have? I didn't get any of the before Watchmen stories, although Darwin probably did the best too. Darwin Cook did a Silk Spectre and a Minutemen series that I guess I better pick up now.
Minutemen was really good. The Silk Spectre series I really enjoyed because mm-hmm. Amanda, and she made it super goofy. And I know more about what went on behind the Silk Spectre stuff because I read all of her interviews whenever I can. And I thought it was kind of interesting that she, when Darwin asked her to do it, she was like, I wasn't alive then, because he was like, he's like, look, they want me to do it, but I think, like, you know, you're a woman, you were a teenage girl, you can probably help me with this, because he was writing it, but he had some help from Amanda mm-hmm. on it for perspective, and then she did the art. But it was a fun book. It was just because you've got, like, a teenage girl in the 70s in San Francisco, and you've got Amanda Connor art, which is just, the little references to the 70s in it are hilarious. There's some scenes that, you know, when that book came out, a couple issues, I was like, I think the last issue, I would not let a child read that, just because I can't remember if it's the last issue or the second to last issue. There's just a scene in there with a very 70s moment. I guess, like, you mentioned key parties earlier.
Yes.
I guess it's kind of in that vibe. It's not a key party,
no,
but it's that vibe. And yeah. There's a panel like that in there, and it's just, I don't think anyone else could have done that Amanda, that's what I loved about it, is that Amanda made it funny, and she was able to put all that detail in that without making it too vulgar. I mean, at least not for my eyes. I thought it was funny, but...
Awesome. I'm going to have to check it out. I have the single issues, and I read Minutemen just because it seemed to be the one, the highest profile of those that tied into the Watchmen, the original story. And I'd reread the Who's Who page on the Minutemen many times over the years just because, all right, this is cool. And whoa, what's going on with Hooded Justice here? So, yeah. So cool. I think that's going to wrap it up for our talk, at least this initial talk. You and I will probably have another podcast or two down the road where we'll look at single subjects and we'll delve into them. But I had a lot of fun talking with you. And,
I had a lot of fun too.
And I look forward to maybe seeing what's coming up from you in the future. Meantime, in Place to Be Nation, we have weekly podcasts from Greg Phillips and Nick Duke entitled The Hard Traveling Fanboys. And this week coming up, I believe, well, let's see, you know, I better not speak out of turn, but they did a last one they did was The Rundown, which was a news of the day. And they did a Civil War review, which was cool. I had to skip it because I have not seen it yet. Also, they did a in-depth look at Batman, the original Tim Burton 1989 film, in their second episode. So check that out if you'd like this podcast. Coming up soon, I will have interviews with other people from the Place to Be Nation comics staff and other comics individuals around town and in my life, including a fairly well-known Marvel comics artist who has agreed to come on. So that'll be cool. And anyway, anything else you'd like to plug out there for us, Stephanie?
Not really. I
current books or things that you do you think people should be checking out if they're not?
Oh my gosh, this is really bad. I can't really, nothing immediately is coming to mind. I'm excited for that Dark Horse Paybacks book. That's going to be really fun. I think the art on there is really good. The writer's really good. Let me see. I'm trying to think of things to plug. That Amanda Connor hardcover is coming out in August, but I don't really think she needs me.
it'll do pretty well.
I think there's enough people that like her enough. Support the DC Rebirth thing. Start, make your comic purchases. Don't buy things that are dumb.
Okay.
That's the best thing. It's like, if you really, really like something, buy it. But let's stop hate reading, because I think that DC really needs to start to hear from us where our money is spent instead of on the internet. I think that's something that's really crucial. Comics right now is that stop wasting your money on stuff you hate read and, support the creators. Oh, and here's something that J.K. Campbell's gotten really into lately is don't buy illegal prints.
Right. If you're going to buy original art, make sure it's verified or there's a way to actually see. There's a picture of the artist doing it, something like that.
Yeah, and if you see, J. Scott Campbell stuff at, a random booth and there's no J. Scott Campbell endorsement or anything, or just any artist that you know their work and you know that they have a deal with a company, people that do the Sideshow Premium art prints, like Stanley Art Germ is one of the people that gets people make illegal copies of. Just keep an eye out for that, and don't be scared to say something to the convention staff when you see that.
See something, say something.
Say something. One thing I would also recommend is hitting up the artist, because they'll be able to tell you yes or no immediately.
There you go.
Just hit them up on Twitter or something, because I think that's something that people need to be more proficient about, is not encouraging that and, letting people know that that's not okay.
I would urge people to – this is a plug. Okay, so this is not along that lines, but I picked up a book yesterday that I didn't think I was going to initially buy because I saw the solicitations for the line, and it's the new DC Hanna-Barbera comics.
Ooh,
I picked up
fun.
Future Quest, and it is a lot of fun. Jeff Parker, Doc Shaner art, very retro but very cool, and I love Space Ghost and Herculoids and some other characters in there that I don't remember from the old 70s cartoon days, but something that these guys have a lot of affection for. I picked up the blank cover variant, so I don't know who I'm going to have do it, but we'll see. So cool. All right, well, we're going to wrap this one up, and we will see you next time. So thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you, Todd.
All right. Take care, Place to Be Nation.